We're here with Bishop Dunn, Bishop of the Antigonish, the Diocese of Antigonish. We're talking about Canada here.
Yes.
It's a pleasure to speak to you today. We're standing right outside the Synod Hall. We're on the 10th day of the working sessions,
mm-hmm.
very intense working sessions on the new evangelization, a vital, vital subject for our church in this modern times. What has struck you most so far, if you can?
Where you have so many people speaking in different languages and yet speaking about the same topic, the sense of how do we live out our faith in Jesus Christ and what does it mean to be a follower of Jesus. And it's very inspiring in that sense. And I also have a sense of something new happening. People are really moved deeply about their own faith. And one of the calls in the Synod is how the evangelizers need to be evangelized. And so it's a real, in many ways, it feels like a retreat, you know, even though it's hard work.
Communion is, of course, implies unity and diversity. And we see all the great wealth of diversity of the Catholic Church. And, of course, representatives of other Christian churches gathered here in the Synod to talk about such an important topic. Yours is very specific. You come from a first world country. You come from the Western world. But you're also confronting your experiences with other younger churches from very different realities. How has that a difference of approach towards evangelization been?
Well, first of all, the sense of ecumenism has been very upfront topic. Quite a number of the fathers, Synod fathers, have raised that topic, and a lot of the people from other denominations have also raised the topic. And it's wonderful to hear how, in many ways, we're united in our witness of Jesus. And so, in that sense, just the witness that we have is a real ecumenical experience. In terms of my church being different than a lot of others, in many ways, it's very similar to lots of others. When I hear the concerns that they have about secularism, individualism, globalization, all of those concerns, even immigrants, there's a real sense that my diocese is fits into the whole gamut. Now, I also have a problem with one of the biggest problems that we have in our diocese right now is trying to live after the experience of sexual abuse. And so that's maybe a little different than some of the other dioceses.
Well, seeing as you brought it up, I can only ask the question. Of course, you were very recently appointed to the pastoral leadership of the Diocese of Antigonish after the experience of the revelations of sexual abuse. How difficult is it to try and step into that role in a diocese that perhaps has lost a certain amount of respect, esteem in the church and church figures?
Extremely difficult. It's difficult from a number of perspectives. First of all, the former bishop certainly was involved in child sexual abuse, child pornography, and that was the pinnacle of people's loss of trust. We also had some experience of sexual abuse by clergy. And so as a result, there's there's an atmosphere of distrust. And so what I tried to do is try to be present with people so that we can grow together and growing in trust. Growing in trust takes a long time of presence, of listening, and trying to be with people, to hear their hurts and give some hope in the midst of the difficulties.
It's really one of the key dioceses, such as, for example, other countries like Ireland, like Australia, like the United States, where new evangelization must begin again from going back to the basics, isn't it?
It certainly is. And this is where we're having lots of difficulties. We're having difficulties in the sense of we need to reorganize ourselves. And so in this coming year, and in fact in the last year, we've had gatherings throughout the whole diocese to listen to people's concerns, to see if there's anything that we need to express, and so that we eventually would like to move toward a pastoral plan for 5 years and looking at saying, how do we begin to rebuild again, renew ourselves as a diocese?
Have you, best way to ask this question is, have you got any ideas from what you've heard here so far in this synod on how to go about that? Has any suggestions been made that have really made you sit back and think, going, well, maybe I could apply that to my church too?
Oh, there's a number of very important interventions. The area of the family is a big thing. The family has been a very important area in terms of Nova Scotia, and we basically have a great love for the family, and yet the family as an evangelizing subject is not really something that is pushed. So that's certainly one of the things that we can move toward. The whole experience of ecumenical relations could also be helpful in terms of being able to witness with one another, and that may also help us grow as well. The area of schools, we don't have Catholic schools, but the area of catechesis and trying to help young people grow in their faith will also be an experience that we'll need to move on. You know, so
perhaps moving a little bit beyond the synod, but something that is, I think, in a certain way tied to the synod. Sunday, we will see the canonization of two towering figures of the church in North America. And what is perhaps even more relevant to this day and age, particularly considering the discussions last week in the Synod, two female figures of the church in the United States, Blessed Marianne Cope, and someone who has a very dear place in the heart of North Americans and Canadians, is Blessed Kateri Tekakwitha. I hope I pronounced her name correctly. What does this mean for the Canadian church?
I know she was a very young woman. She was a Mohawk. Her father was a Mohawk. Her mother was a Huron. These are both the tribes in North America. Very early in her life, she was touched by the experience of faith. She died eventually only as a young 20-year-old. But her last words is, you know, "I love you, Jesus." It's a real sense of evangelizing young person who could really touch the hearts of Native people today. For the Canadian Church, we have a large delegation here, about 1,500 pilgrims who are coming over for the canonization. In my own diocese, we have 8,000 Mi'kmaq, and so those are First Nations people, and we have about 50 or 60 people who are coming as well. This is a very important aspect, and the way I consider my own diocese is that we have a number of groups of people that really color the texture of the diocese, including Scottish people. Some of those first Scottish people came over, and they really give a sense of the diocese. We have some French, we have the Mi'kmaq. And so I think the Mi'kmaq is a really sometimes a group of people that are isolated, and so this will bring them into the heart of the church. As soon as I go home on November 4th, which is next couple weekend after, we're having a big diocesan celebration to highlight the Kateri's canonization, and so we'll bring the native people as well as the rest of the people of the diocese to come together in the cathedral for a celebration of this important event in the church.
Perhaps that would tie in perfectly then to my last question. One of the issues which has been touched on but really hasn't been focused on is the transmission of the faith to young people, younger generations, who are, shall we say, lost generations. Mm. They're the result of what the Holy Father has described as, and me being a member of that generation, I can confirm, a very weak catechesis, mm-hmm. particularly mm-hmm. in the 1980s, 70s and 80s. As a leader of a diocese with so many young people in it, how important is it trying to bridge that gap now?
Oh, this is a very important question for me. It's an important question because I think the young people still have a yearning for God. They have a yearning for searching for truth, searching for meaning in their own lives, and there's lots of ways that they express that. But in terms of the church being able to reach out to them, for many years we had youth ministry in the diocese, but for maybe the last 5 or 6 years that has fallen down. And so as a result, we need to work on high school students especially. So confirmation age in my diocese ranges from about 13 to 16. And so that's one of the ways of reaching out to them. But we also need some kind of a consistent way of being able to work with them and listen to them, be with them, and form them. That's a very difficult question. And it's just yesterday I heard one of the interventions on terms of, you know, maybe bringing people together just to give them support that they need and moving them further on. But it's a huge question, and I'm hopeful that I will get some more a way of responding to that question. You know,
there's also the question of the sacraments of initiation, the ordering of the sacraments of initiation. I know that in New Zealand, for example, confirmation comes first and then baptism. Does this really make a difference when preparing someone to enter into the church or preparing someone for?
Certainly there are arguments on both sides of that question. We had a big discussion a couple of days ago at the Synod on this question. In terms of practice in Canada, there are some dioceses that have already rearranged the order from baptism to confirmation to Eucharist, and then the bishop goes and celebrates confirmation and Eucharist in some of those places. Sometimes as well, the bishop delegates the priest to celebrate confirmation and Eucharist at the same time. But it also causes a little problem in terms of pastoral relationship with these young people. It seems like after they finish, you know, First Communion or Confirmation, First Communion, then they are disconnect from the church for a longer period, and so there are real problems. So in my own diocese, we have Confirmation, in teenage years, so that it would be after Communion. I've thought about working on the order of sacraments. But I have some other issues that I need to deal with first, you know.
But this really will be my last question, I promise. It's just that, you know, the general sense of here is people are talking about challenges to the church, problems that have to be dealt with in the church, issues the church must face. Is there any good news from the synod?
Oh, wonderful news. Like, I have a real sense, as I said in the beginning, this is like a retreat for me. There's a real sense of people sharing the good news throughout the world. There are lots of obstacles and lots of shadows and difficult moments, but there are also lots of good news stories. And, you know, even in stories where there is oppression and suffering, there's a real sense of hope and believing in Jesus Christ makes a difference for people's lives. And that's really good news, you know, so...
Bishop, and thank you very much for speaking to us.